Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. My Mets are winning. Your Braves are losing. All is good with the world, Dustin.
I'm sure you're very happy, so I'm just going to focus most of my attention this week on the Masters at this point, Jim.
That's a smart move on your part, Dustin. Before we get to football, and there was a on Monday of this week, a big hearing on the House settlement. It hasn't been finalized, but we're inching ever closer, and I really want to get into that with you. But before we do, I know you're a big college hoops guy. We had the final on Monday night. Great game, great finish, very physical game, Dustin. But in the end, Houston couldn't even get a shot off at the buzzer.
That last defensive possession, I don't think they got a shot off their last two possessions, if I remember right. And it was just, you know, Florida's defense was solid throughout the game. But it was really good on that last possession. I mean, nobody could get open. That was as good of a defensive final possession as I think I've seen in college basketball. And it's almost kind of fitting because, like, that's how Houston got to that point. Like, their defense was very physical. They were very good. And so for Florida to be the one that locked them down and didn't even allow them to get a shot off, I thought that was pretty impressive. But, Jim, I think that this was also – we talked a lot about, you know, not a lot of major upsets in the first two rounds, not a lot of dramatics. And while maybe that was true and maybe it was rather, I don't want to say uneventful, but you didn't have maybe quite the same level of excitement in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament that you have had in previous seasons. This was as good of a Final Four in terms of all three of those games as I remember.
It was. For Houston, unfortunate for them, they didn't win the final, but that semifinal against Duke was one for the ages. What a great comeback. What, they were down seven with a minute to go. They win. And we'll ask you, though, because I know earlier I asked you about Purdue losing with a tough call at the end of the game.
Yep.
The Duke-Houston game, well, I won't give away my thoughts. First, I want to hear from you. The Cooper flag over the top foul that was called late in the game, that was probably a game changer.
So, you know what's funny is, and I don't know if I'm going to phrase this how I want to, so just bear with me, everyone. When I first saw it, like in real time, as it was happening, my fiance was sitting on one couch, I'm sitting on the other, and I looked at her and I go, oh, you can't do that. That's over the back. And sure enough, they whistled him, because from the angle of the initial camera shot to me, it looked like it was clear as day. Like, he had bent his entire body, reached over. I can't remember who the guy boxing out was for Houston, but it looked like he had reached over and committed a foul. Like, I thought for sure that was a foul. And then I saw three different angles and I was like, oh, he looks like he was pretty straight up and his arm just had extended out and tapped the ball. So I don't remember which official and what the angle was that it was called. I think if you were behind him, and maybe that was the guy making the call, again, I can't remember. It's been a couple days. But I could see where that would be a foul. But if you were on the other side, I don't think it was. So I'm interested to hear your take, because in real time, the way it had played out, I thought for sure that was a foul. So I understood the whistle. And then when you see it, I mean, again, we get the advantage of instant replay and slow motion and all that. I didn't think it was a foul.
Well, in basketball, there are certain plays that are called more by the appearance than the reality, if you will. It's like when they'll call walking on someone, when there are plays where a player takes three steps and it doesn't get called because it looks like a natural move. You do something awkward, they call walking, whether it is or not. All that to say, when a player reaches over someone, boxing them out, that's an indicator to call over the back whether there's enough contact for the call or not. That's, I think, what you're talking about, what you saw on TV initially. Now, my only counter to that is, and I do think that's exactly what happened, Dustin. The angle, it looked like he was over the back. Not necessarily that he was, but it looked that way, which is how that call was made most of the time. The other part to this aspect to it, though, is Houston especially plays so physical. And there were so many of these games. I'll go even the Auburn-Florida game. Late in that game, the Auburn players, they were mugging the Florida players, okay? Yeah,
right.
And it's when a ball's a little bit loose, and I've said this, that I've officiated basketball, and I want very badly as an official not to decide the game. So if it's not a case of, hey, the player was shooting and was fouled, and obviously the foul affected his shot, you got to call that. But if it's two guys going after the ball, you kind of don't want to call that foul because you don't want to be the determining factor. Well, anyway, again, long story to say, the game was so physical that to call that seemed out of place when you're letting so much else go, Dustin.
Yeah, and so this is going to bring my – then I'm going to ask you this question because I thought this was egregious last night. Now, the last, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, it was fine. The first half of the championship game, Florida and Houston, there were four – I think there were four total fouls called. And then you had like 13 in the first 6 or 7 minutes of the second half. And then the rest of the final 12 minutes, I thought, for the most part, was pretty evenly officiated. But it seemed like, okay, they called, I don't remember, I think it was Florida. Florida had the first 4 or 5 fouls. Then they did the obligatory evening of the fouls, as I call it.
Yes.
Like, what is the thinking behind that? Was that just bad officiating? Were they trying to get the game under control? Because I have no problem with them calling. I have no problem with them letting it be physical. I have no problem with them allowing it to be or being nitpicky. But to me, excuse me, be consistent throughout the course of the game, because clearly at halftime, Florida's message was match their physicality. And when they did, they got called for 5 straight fouls.
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of like the old baseball thing in calling balls and strikes. Just be consistent.
Yes.
If it's a strike in the first inning, it's a strike in the eighth inning. Now, it's the same way here. What I think happened is you'll sometimes see officials who are fearful of a physical game calling fouls early. Let's get this under control before it gets out of hand. And I get that. They obviously did not do that Monday night. Okay.
Right.
But I think at halftime, what you had was two things that you alluded to. One was Florida saying, hey, we got to match their physicality. And the second thing being the official saying, you know what? We maybe need to get this under control. And it felt like both those things happened to the detriment of Florida. So it reminded me, I think the same player got multiple fouls in the span of 4 seconds. And it reminded me years ago playing with basketball with a teammate who had come into the game as a sub. Like we used to say he was fouls per second. Okay. He was the only guy who had that statistic, fouls per second. That's what we saw from Florida. It was fouls per second. And I didn't like the inconsistency of it. And it's, I think if I were to officiate a game like that with Houston, I'd probably call the game very closely early to just say, no, you can't keep getting away with that, because Houston just, I think they're over the top with their physicality.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like they go into this game like, make the officials call it. And then if they'll call it, we'll adjust. But if they're not going to call it, we'll continue to play that same style of physicality. And so that's my only gripe. Like, I thought for the most part, like, I didn't have – there was a missed goaltending call that they should have gotten. But I think for the most part, it was like probably this is the same thing I said about the Purdue-Houston game. And I apologize because that's what's also fresh on the memory. But I thought for probably 30 minutes, that game was very well officiated last night. And probably for 36 minutes, the Purdue-Houston game. It's just down the stretch, there were four pivotal calls that the officials missed. And so that's what kind of sticks with you. And so I think the fact that I don't think the fact that that game, let me say this. I think that the fact that they were at least did it at the beginning of the second half, nobody's talking about it. Instead, they're talking about the great finish. The last 10 minutes of the game was incredible. So at least they didn't start blowing the whistles with like 5 minutes to go to try to get everything under control, right? Like they did it at least early in the second half. So I still don't like it. I wish there would be a little bit more consistency. But again, I think probably for the most part, it was a well-officiated game.
And overall, and the game itself, though, I'll give some credit to the Florida coach. The star player not playing well, and he benched him at a point. Now, this is different than Rick Pitino with his star player at St. John's, who benched his guy at the end, never brought him back. But here was a situation. He sat the star player, who was obviously out of sync. Just it wasn't right. And when your star player isn't playing particularly well, that affects the entire offense. The offense was better without him. Okay. That's when they started to rally. But he didn't bury the player on the bench. He then brought him back, and he was very effective late in the game. Yeah. I give a lot of credit to the Florida coach.
Yeah. I thought that that was a good, and like his ability to keep his kids in the moment, because there were times like early in that game, Condon had like three travels. Walter Clayton didn't score at all the first half. Like they looked out of sorts. And so I remember it was one of those situations where, to me, when they were down 31-28, I was like, wow, the fact that Florida's down three, they have to feel really good about this. Now, when Houston got up 12, I thought it was over, but he's a tremendous coach, took him three seasons. I was at a game. My brother works at UF. I know we're running out of time this segment, but just a quick anecdote. My brother works at UF, so there was one time when we went to a game, and I think it was his first season there. And let me tell you about the complaining I heard about regarding Todd Golden, what a mistake it was to hire him. And maybe it's a sign that maybe you should have just a little bit of patience, because what happens in year one may not be an indicator of what's going to happen down the road. So he's a really good coach, and he's going to be at Florida, I think, for probably quite a long time.
Sports fans and patience. No.
That's microwave society.
No, that's not how it works, Dustin. All right, when we come back, we'll get to what we were supposed to talk about.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Belanti, quarter number two of our show. In segment one, we talked about the NCAA tournament. Finally, you mentioned that early in the tournament, we didn't have as many surprises as you look for. But in the end, they had four number one seeds, which I think, Dustin, pretty much guaranteed both the semifinals and the finals would be good basketball, which is what you really want.
Yeah, and I remember, I think it was 2008 was the last time, and now I don't remember, but I know it was Kansas and Memphis in the championship game, and I know UCLA got there. Maybe North Carolina was that year, but I remember that Final Four being – maybe it's because I remember the championship game being so good, Mario Chalmers hitting some threes, Derrick Rose missing some free throws down the stretch. But that was from what I remember, it was at least a really good championship game. And I think the Final Four was pretty good too. I don't know if it was as good as this one, but this is why, you know, everybody loves the upsets, but when you get the power teams in there and they're all in the Final Four, you usually get a really fun final weekend of the season.
And they were four really good teams, so any permutation was going to work. All right, let's shift gears here. This week also, Dustin, was a hearing on the House settlement. And, you know, college sports has changed so drastically over the last several years. NIL, the portal, the reconfiguration of the conferences, just on and on, the expanded playoffs. And now we might be seeing the biggest change with this House settlement. Now, the hearing, no one knew if we would get the final word on Monday. Turns out it will be delayed at least another week for a couple other things, but it sounds like we're going to get there to the settlement. First of all, just your overview, what does all this mean that with the House settlement?
We could go probably a couple different ways with this. Ultimately, I think I've voiced my opinion on this show, knowing people that are in athletics. I think that this was inevitable. I think that this is a way to probably get to contract situation, much like I would just compare it to like the scholarship situation. But now you're dealing with like tangible dollars and cents as opposed to just a scholarship. Like you'll probably sign some sort of quote unquote national letter of intent. And whether that's 2 years, 3 years, you know, it may depend on the sport even. You know, football may be 3 years because you can't declare for the draft until then anyway. Basketball may be 1 year because you can't declare for the NBA. You have to spend 1 year in college. So we'll see how that works out. But my guess is that's going to be how that part works. My fear of it is that, again, you're probably going to lose a lot of Olympic sports. And I wonder, too, with some of these lower conferences like the MAC, the Sun Belt, how many of those teams will be able to sustain a football program and how many are just going to say, you know what, this isn't worth it. Like, it's not worth the money we're bringing in to pay all these student athletes. And not only that, but those programs are probably going to get gutted by bigger programs. That's already happening, but it's probably going to happen on an even larger scale, in my opinion. So I think there's positives and negatives to this. I think if this is a streamline to where you can kind of put some guardrails on the transfer portal situation and have kids under contract. And, but I think what's funny is a lot of people talk about how this will be maybe a counter or, you know, take the place of NIL. NIL is not going anywhere. People are still going to be able to make millions of dollars through sponsorships and through other things if they want to. And so I don't know. That's just my, I guess, the very general blimp view of my thoughts on that. But I think there's a couple different things you can talk about with this situation.
There are several. There are several ramifications to it. Let's get out of the way. First of all, there's like, I think it's $2.8 billion to compensate former athletes. Now, that only goes back to like 2016. There's a statute of limitations, so that's as far back as they can go with this. And the NCAA, why would they agree to this? Simple. If it went to court instead of the settlement, it might be more like $20 billion instead of $3 billion. Now, the most prominent piece of this is the universities are going to be able to start paying players directly. And that they're using a formula, a percentage of revenue, that came out to like $20.5 million that will go to the athletes, direct payment. For the schools to pay the players. Now, the big question became, well, how do you distribute that? And there's an issue. Does it just go evenly among all student athletes? Well, it turns out it appears that the answer is going to be the vast majority of the money is going to go to the revenue sports, which is big number, like 70% of it going to football, 10, 15, 20% going into men's basketball, and the rest of the athletes pick up the crumbs that are left over from there, Dustin.
Right, Right. And that's where I think you get into the situation with the Olympic sports. So I don't know what the answer is. I think some places will probably value sports. So I'm going to give you an example too, because I've followed this a little bit more closely, but there's going to be some schools that probably allocate. What's interesting is how these schools are going to allocate these certain funds. Like volleyball is a huge deal at Nebraska. So the volleyball program is probably going to get some of that money, not a lot, but probably, you know, maybe it's on par with women's basketball or men's basketball, even. I don't know. Baseball is a big deal at Florida. So that's probably going to get, you know, maybe not as much as men's basketball, but it may get more than women's basketball, you know, or volleyball or some of those other sports. So it's going to be interesting to see how that's allocated. But I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this back pay. I would like some other thoughts on this. I don't like missed wages. Like, to me, this is kind of the thing where you know what you're signing up for when you sign up for it. And it's great that they can get paid now, but you want back pay for all this stuff. I don't know. Learn LinkedIn.
Well, I think the answer to that is it could be a lot worse. You know, that the $2.8 billion versus if it went to court where and I think what would be helpful in all this is to understand some of the other ramifications. Now, people hear house settlement. I think a lot of people don't even realize there was a person by the name of Grant House.
Yeah, swimmer.
A swimmer at Arizona State. And his issue, you might say, well, what's a swimmer doing, you know, leading this charge? How much money was he going to make? Well, my friend, let me tell you, he might have made a lot more money than you think because he was a potential, or maybe he was, an Olympic athlete. And his issue was that all other Olympic athletes who weren't going to college were getting compensated. They were getting paid for endorsements and, you know, supporting them while they were in training to get to the Olympics. But because he was a collegiate athlete, he was in essence being punished. He couldn't make the money because he would have lost his collegiate eligibility, which he didn't think was fair. I happen to agree with him on that. So what you would have, I think, Dustin, is not so much that it's fair or unfair. It's a question of how it would have been ruled in the courts. And if you had all of those houses individually taking the NCAA to court, that's where I think they end up with a potential $20 billion price tag.
Well, I mean, probably. And it is funny that it is starting from an Olympic sport athlete, and that's probably the people that are going to get the least amount of money. I don't even know how you allocate this money. Like, that's to me the biggest question. And it seems like you're going to, it seems like they're, like you said, you're going to leave it up to the school, but like, what stops this from another lawsuit happening? What if somebody says, and maybe this was, you sent me an article and I read through it, but maybe this was in there and I just don't know. But what happens if a wrestler at Penn State says, you know what, I only got $2,000. I think I could have made $10,000. I'm going to sue the NCAA. I don't understand how this, like, to me, this is such a snowball. And this is where me not having a legal background and knowing nothing about law outside of Law and Order Special Victims Unit, Jim, is really coming to bite me.
Well, Dustin, I'm not a lawyer either, but I have probably seen every episode of original Law and Order. Okay. So I think that gives me.
Yeah. Get off your high horse, Jim. Nobody likes that one.
The original is the best one. Easily, Dustin. We'll have to have another show with that discussion. But sure. I think what it does is it qualifies me to say this. I think the issue, this settlement takes care of the past. The question it will, I think, occur going forward. And we haven't struck yet on the big part of this is also with the settlement, NIL and where it plays in. You're right. The amount of money, the $20 million going directly to the athletes from the school will not remove NIL. But the settlement says any compensation to a player above $600 has to go through a clearinghouse, the accounting firm, Deloitte accounting firm, to look at it and say, wait a minute, this local yokel car dealership wants you to be their spokesperson, which is worth a few thousand dollars typically, but you're getting paid $1 million for it. Nuh-uh, that doesn't work. And I think that's where a lawsuit is going to come.
Because you think they're, you think a lawsuit's going to come because they, you can't put a cap on what a company values as market price? Is that what you're saying?
I think from the flip side is you, Dustin Schutte, are a five-star football player and someone's willing to put $1 million in your pocket to go to their school. Yeah. Who are these people to restrict your ability, Dustin, to make that $1 million?
Yeah.
I think that's where the problem is going to come in. And until you have, and we'll talk about this when we come back, collective bargaining and, you know, contracts or Congress stepping in. We're going to talk about that all, Dustin, when we get back.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking about what appears to be happening, the house settlement in college athletics, where the schools are now going to be able to compensate student athletes to the tune of a little over $20 million a year. But it's led to a lot more questions. And Dustin, when we wrapped up and I kind of cut you off, we were talking about the fact that as part of this settlement, any NIL payment to a player over $600 is going to have to go through a clearinghouse to say, yeah, the compensation is fair market value. You're not being paid an extra amount of money to get to attend that school or stay at that school. That's where you asked, will there be lawsuits at some point? Dustin, I think that's where it's going to come in.
Yeah, I could see that. And I'm just thinking of a way that the NCAA could screw over like Illinois or Indiana or somebody like that with this, because it seems to me like when you do this, to me, it seems like and sounds like the original prior to the NCAA transfer portal, when teams would get approval for like or players would get approval for immediate eligibility. And I'm going to use this as an example. So I think it was 2018 or 2019. Forgive me if I'm a year off here, but Justin Fields transferred from Georgia to Ohio State, was granted immediate eligibility. No real reason why. Luke Ford, also a Georgia player, tight end, transferred from Georgia to Illinois that same year because one of his family members was, I don't want to say terminally ill, but very ill, like, and wanted to be close to him. And transferred to Illinois, which was the closest school to his hometown, and was denied immediate eligibility. I would wonder then, in this type of situation, if you go through a clearinghouse, are there situations where it's market value for everybody across the United States? Or I have an Ohio State helmet doing this sort of, you know, participating in this sort of advertisement or whatever is actually worth about $600,000. If I do this in an Illinois helmet, it's worth $100,000. because of the brand recognition. Like, I feel like that has to be part of it. There's a reason when you watch these commercials, they use like March Madness, they use North Carolina, they use Indiana, they use Duke. There's a reason why they use those brands and those logos, because those are the biggest brands. Those are the biggest, most recognizable. And so I just wonder, is that a part of it? Or is this is the going rate for a student athlete? I don't know. Like, to me, it's just a way that the NCAA losing control in all of this since over the last 5 years, like it's just been, they've slowly lost their grasp on everything. To me, this is probably just a way that they can control it. So I don't know how you would not approve of certain things, unless the only thing I could see them controlling is, okay, this advertisement, this NIL opportunity was used specifically to recruit you to this school. We're going to deny it. You can't get that money. You can't recruit kids this way. But again, as you said, I don't know how that then doesn't stop a lawsuit from happening.
Well, I'm going to probably sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I'll argue both sides. One is, this is not the NCAA making the ruling, which is good, because I don't trust them. Okay, so they're not trustworthy.
Sure.
And two, if you're the NCAA, you're saying, hey, it's not
me. True.
I'm not the one saying that that's invalid. It's this very reputable accounting firm that's making the call. I will also venture to guess that this reputable accounting firm is not going to get caught up in, it probably should have only been $2,000, but you got $4,000. That's arguable, so we let it go. I think what they're going to look for is the egregious, like I said, a local car dealership. The value of the endorsement top end is $10,000 and the kid's being given $500,000. It's like, wait a minute. If I want the reputation of this accounting firm and I'm concerned about it, I want to make sure if I put the hammer down, it's easy to justify. Now, but my question becomes, will the court say, you know what? I don't care. I don't care if what he provided as far as quote unquote endorsement was only worth 10 grand. You can't restrict this kid's ability to make the 500,000. If some person is willing to give it to them, they need to make it.
That's what I don't understand. How do you cap? Because you could easily argue and say, well, we thought, we would sell 10 cars, and let's just, for simple math, let's pretend these cars are junky and they're all $10,000, right? Let's just
make our math easier.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say we're going to give him, we thought we'd get 70, we give him 75,000 to make 100,000 and we have a profit of 25,000. Now I know that's not always how economics work, business works, but that's just my easy math. So you could justify that for anything. Anybody could make up something and a number and justify it. So I don't know how you would, I agree with you, but I don't know how you, I just don't know how you would rule that.
Well, that's why I think the accounting firm will just go after what's egregious. So if Arch Manning does a national ad, well, a national ad obviously is worth a whole lot more than a local Champaign, Illinois, Nissan nationally versus a local Joe's Nissan in Champaign, Illinois. Very different. You can't pay the Illinois guy for the local dealership as much as you're paying Arch Manning for doing the national one. And that's why I said, if the numbers are at least arguable, I think they'll let it go. I think they'll be looking for the outrageous one. That's why I said I think where they might run into trouble is if legally, hey, doesn't matter. If this idiot economically says, I'm going to pay this kid $1 million and it's really only worth $5,000, so be it. That you can't restrict that player from making the money. That's the court ruling. And what I don't understand is, if it goes further, could collective bargaining fix that? Could an antitrust agreement with Congress fix that or keep that? I don't, that my law and order background doesn't answer that for me.
Doesn't cover that. I don't know how it would, because to me, it's, I don't understand how it would be different if you're going to go this route. I don't know how it would be different from like an NBA, NFL. Like, those guys can make as much as they want off endorsements and advertisements. I understand where the school is capped, where everybody gets the same amount to create a quote unquote level playing field. But I don't know. I mean, maybe you could. I don't know how you could do it. You see LeBron James every 12 seconds on TV. That dude's making a ton of money. Who's to say? We'll just use your example, Arch Manning. He's got a recognizable name and face. He plays at a prominent program. If 12 different companies want to use him, what's to stop them? What's to stop them from paying that certain amount? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the collective bargaining would do there.
Well, that's, I think that, though, is fair market value, because if Cooper Flagg, who's the biggest name in college basketball, if he got – he's got a sneaker endorsement deal, okay?
Yeah.
So that's because his name value and that sneaker company, they don't give a damn about Duke. They don't care. They want Cooper Flagg. And that's the gymnast from LSU who's dating Paul Skeens, the baseball player. Okay,
Livy Dunn. Yes,
yes, she can make so much money in endorsements, but they're not going to flag that because she's making it because she does have name value. Her name is worth that much. Whereas Joe Blow, who's a third string left guard. He has no name value, no meaning. That's what they want to make sure. Now, the third string left guard won't necessarily make a lot of money, but even the high school player who's a five-star who nobody knows his name yet, but I'm going to pay him $1 million because I want him to go to my school. I think that's what they're going to flag. And it's a case of, if there weren't the interest for him to play at my school, what would his dollar value be? And chances are very little.
Right. Right. And no, I agree with that. There's just so many different avenues and intricacies with this. I just don't know how it's going to be governed. I mean, I guess we're going to find out, right? Like, it's coming.
Yeah, it's just the next step in this whole process. And, well, we spent plenty of time on that part, but there's several other things, as you said, that affect this. And I want to hit a couple of those, Dustin. One of the other issues is this number of scholarships, which they're going by roster size now. So football, instead of having 85 scholarships, you're going to be restricted to 105 roster positions, but I could give out 105 scholarships. And that's happening with other sports also. The concern is where now there might be 120 players on the football roster, at least 15 guys got to go because of that restriction.
Yeah, and that's an unfortunate unintended consequence of this, but I don't understand why. I mean, there's probably some logic and reasoning behind this, but I don't understand what the problem. I mean, it's probably, it has to do with money. I understand, and how much you can allocate and all those sort of things, but I don't know. That's going to be tough for some of these schools to trim down, because you've got a lot of guys who are practice squad players, and then I don't know, maybe that doesn't affect it because they're not technically on your roster, but you're not going to be able to have 120 guys stand on that sideline in home games anymore. So that's another thing. I mean, I don't know. We seem to be taking a lot of there's a lot of people that are taking a lot of opportunities away from a lot of other potential student athletes, in my opinion. Now, they're walk-ons, so they're probably still in college, but nonetheless.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk about another aspect of this.
We'll do that when we get back after this break.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to quarter number four of our show, Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking about this house settlement with college athletics, and the university is going to be able to compensate the players, but there's more going on to it. We were talking about the roster limit versus the scholarship limit, which means football specifically allowing 105 players, not 120, but instead of 85 scholarships, you could have all 105 on scholarship. Well, first of all, schools are going to have to find the money for 20 more scholarships if they want that. And a lot of places, they're not going to do that. But one of the things that I think is part of this is in this hearing, that issue was brought up. And the judge said, I'm concerned about that. Give me an answer to it. Give me a solution. And one of the things she suggested was perhaps grandfathering in any of the athletes who are already there. In other words, you're a walk-on on the football team, you're player number 106 or 107, that player could be grandfathered in. Sounds like a pretty reasonable solution to me, Dustin.
Yeah, I think so. That way you're not, you know, cutting these kids off. And you know, they get a chance to be a part of a team that they went to a school for, and it's to me, again, it would also help with the high school recruiting aspect. If you cut, and this is not going to affect maybe a large portion, but if you cut, let's say every team cuts 25 players, right? That means you got 25 players that maybe are just going to say, you know, I got a chance to play at Penn State for 2 years. I'm just going to call it a career. I'm going to finish my degree and go into the business world. Or somebody may say, you know what? I was rising up and doing some good things at Penn State. What if I transferred to Ball State or, you know, some other school? And then that directly impacts then your high school recruiting because you have these roster limits. I mean, it's going to impact it anyway because you've got the roster limits. But so I think that that's a way to kind of gradually, you know, make these adjustments into roster limitations. So if you've got a certain number and then you just don't fill those spots when those kids graduate. So I think that's a totally reasonable and appropriate type of response and a good question. Like, you don't want to just leave these kids out in the cold. I mean, again, if they're already paying for college and they're probably in good shape, but nonetheless, it's still something that a lot of people have to think about moving forward.
Here's another aspect to this, and these are, you know, the unintended consequences. I think the most serious one being, you know what, as a school, we now have to come up with an additional $20 million to pay our athletes. We don't have to, but if we want to compete, because we know the next guy's doing it. So we got to come up with another $20 million. Gee, if the standard becomes having in football 90, 95, 100 guys on scholarship, there's the cost of those scholarships also. Where am I going to make that money? The one place that I have lots of power as the university is I have 30 intercollegiate sports. You know what? I just start cutting those sports that do not generate revenue. So, yeah. I think a lot of these athletes, There'll be the Title IX argument that women's sports should be getting more money. There's the argument these Olympic sports. The one power the universities have is, you know what? We'll just cut men's and women's tennis.
That's going to happen. That is going to happen. I have it on good authority that is going to happen. And I don't, again, each school may value different sports. But if you're a team, let's say, so Wisconsin did this years ago, they don't have a baseball team. I mean, if you are Minnesota, I don't know what Minnesota's baseball team is. I don't watch a lot of college baseball. But if you're Minnesota and you finish second to last in the Big Ten every year, is it worth the money? You're not bringing it. You're probably not bringing in any revenue. It's cold in Minnesota probably for 80% of your season. I don't know how many people are going to games, but that's just an example. You may cut baseball, and we've talked about this with the scholarship. You've got to have the equal number of scholarship for men and women's sports. So men's sports are way – they're going to go before women's sports, in my opinion. So you may see – they may keep women's golf, women's tennis, and you may see men's and women – or men's tennis, men's golf, men's baseball, those kind of sports gone. Like I could completely see a situation where you have maybe two or three men's sports and whatever that equal number is for women's sports, 7, 8. I don't know what it keeps the scholarship limits where it is, but that is going to happen. It's just a matter of which programs are going to get cut.
And, you know, there's already schools, like I believe the Big Ten does a pretty good job of supporting a lot of sports. I believe they're like Alabama has many fewer sports than, say, Ohio State.
Yeah.
And that will create, I don't think a huge advantage, you know, with, okay, I don't have to split the money so many different ways. But if football's getting 70, 75% anyway, I don't think that differential will be great. But I think it will affect the bottom line of the university, which right now that's a concern. And you know what? My feeling is, no offense to the golf team, but you know, there's no rule that says we have to give you a scholarship because you're able to play golf well enough to, you know, in Wisconsin, right. You know, you're worthy of that. If you're good enough, go find your golf scholarship down south or where it's relevant. So I think that's going to be the case. And this is one of those where I know a lot of people will blame the big bad universities and NCAA. This is the one, though. Candidly, I can't blame them for it, Dustin.
Well, I can't blame them for it. But to like, I don't know. I don't like that you're taking so many opportunities away from other student athletes that may not get an education. Now, let's be frank. Like, if you're playing golf, you probably have some money stowed away. That's not a cheap, not a cheap sport, right? So, like, those kids are probably going to be fine. And there's a lot of different, like, for now. What would be interesting, though? So, I don't like the option of taking away opportunities for student athletes, but that's going to happen because kids may not get a college education that other, you know, are getting a college education that may not otherwise get one. Now, what may happen as a result is you may also get more separate. So the NBA has the G League. Do you get a golf version of that? Do you get a tennis version where there's lower? Do you get more track and field independent leagues or training facility, you know, whatever it might be to train with the best? I don't know. I would assume that that's probably going to happen in some regard if you cut some of these athletic programs. The other thing is they could keep it, but you may just have to pay your way or use your NIL money or donations or whatever may happen. Like there's a lot of different avenues this could potentially go.
Or club sport.
Or club and sports, yeah.
You brought up the good point of, you know, are there alternatives? Well, they're already within golf. There is a G League.
Yeah,
I forget what they call it now. And the same thing with
sport.
There it is. But in these other sports, if you go to any other country, they don't have the collegiate sports system like we do. But they have clubs and organizations. That's how they get their Olympic athletes. And you will still have those things. So, you know, I don't think the universities have this obligation to finance you, Dustin, through your, you know, college years because you happen to be a good bowler, you know? That right. It's great that you're a great bowler, but that doesn't mean I owe you a college education because of it. There was one other aspect to this. Again, I think a little bit of the unintended consequences, but could be interesting, is we look at sports. You're a Big Ten writer. I follow Penn State. You think football, okay? Then you think basketball. But there are some big-time schools in college basketball that don't play football. The Big East, the yep. Marquettes, Villanova, Georgetown, Providence. Now, they have this $20 million, but they don't have to commit, say, $16 million of it to football. Will this give them an advantage if they could, hey, let's put it into our basketball program?
It will give them an advantage, and it probably gives them an advantage in other sports too. Because like you said, they don't have to distribute it. Even if they're at the FCS, an FCS level school is way less expensive than what it is to fund an FBS or power program. So those teams are going to be in – those schools are going to be in great position when it comes to probably men's and women's basketball. Maybe your spring sports, I don't know, other fall sports. Like, you can allocate that a lot more. Now, again, a large portion of that, as you mentioned, is probably going to go to men's basketball, and then probably second on that list is going to be women's basketball. But I think that's a great point. Like, you could have the reincarnation of the original Big East, Jim, what it was what it was built for.
Yeah, we'll have, again, a Final Four with Villanova, St. John's, and Georgetown.
There you go.
Might there be some schools who say, you know, strategically say, hey, we're Vanderbilt. We're never going to win the Southeast Conference, at least not in football. How about we allocate those funds towards baseball, where we already have a really good baseball program?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That, you know, that is, and I think that there's some, I don't know, I don't want to say pushback, but I think there's also going to be at some of these schools where maybe football isn't valued as high. And that's not to say it's not valued, but like Purdue, Indiana, basketball reigns supreme at those two schools. Now, I still think a large chunk of that, but let's say if you're Ohio State, you give 70% to the football team. Does Purdue and Indiana maybe give 50%, 55%, you know, whatever that might be. There could be a lot of different things that that money's allocated for. That's a really interesting thought that I had not thought of. I thought where you were going to go with that is do some schools like at the lower conferences, you know, Florida Atlantic, Ball State, do those schools say, you know what, we're not ever going to be in the playoff anyway. We're just either going to drop down to FCS or eliminate our football program. We're going to invest in these other sports where we can be competitive. And like that could be a game changer too.
That's a good point. And are you all of a sudden going to see Nebraska women's volleyball, Oklahoma women's yep. softball, you know, Penn State wrestling, put money there. Yep. And they maybe don't have to steal from football. Maybe they just decide, you know what, Penn State basketball, we're not going to worry about so much. Interesting, and it's going to play out over the next several weeks, months, and years, Dustin. All right, thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.